So appearing in the Planchard composition of L2 G mod gamma. And here what I'm using is the fact that, abstractly speaking, this is a unitary representation of a very nice group, a group with nice properties, so there is an essentially unique way to decompose it into a direct integral of irreducible representations. So these are irreducible unitary with some multiplicities. So G hat denotes the unitary dual, the set of irreducible unitary representations of G. To be distinguished from G check, which will be the dual group, the Langlands dual group, the connected component of the Langlands dual group. So abstractly speaking, this L2 space always has such a decomposition, so we can ask which representations show up. This is the first approach. The second approach is to work in a different category and to say that an automorphic representation is an admissible representation, so is an admissible representation of G of finite length together with an embedding of this representation into the space of smooth functions on G mod gamma. So, and here I would say that an automorphic form is an element in the image of, is a function in the image of such a new. And I'm underlining this because this really corresponds to the standard definition of automorphic forms, although usually you see it a little bit differently. So in this context, I need to remind you what I was saying yesterday, what is admissible and in which category we are working. So admissible for both, admissible means that if you restrict to maximal compact subgroup, then this has finite multiplicities. But implicitly, we also have in mind that pi is, as a representation of the finite adels, it is smooth, which means that every vector has an open stabilizer. And as a representation of the completions at the infinite places, it is what I was saying yesterday, smooth, moderate growth representation. All this is behind the word admissible. And of course, if you take into account the fact that every vector here is invariant under an open compact subgroup of the finite adels, then you understand that every f in the image of every automorphic form is really a function on a quotient of this form like we were seeing yesterday. So this is a subgroup of the, this is a open compact subgroup of the finite adels. So this is the setting in which we were talking yesterday. So you might consider, you might prefer to consider f as a function on G mod gamma and take the action of G of QP on it by translations, or you might prefer to preserve K invariance, and then if you want to preserve K invariance, you cannot act on the right by translations by the by G of QP. But what you can do, so if you consider the space of functions here, then you can act by the Hecke algebra. So you can act by the Hecke algebra of GV KV. I hope my notation is clear, right? So imagine that this subgroup is a product over all places of open compact subgroups, and then this is the Hecke algebra of G of KV with respect to the subgroup KV, which means this is the Hecke algebra of compactly supported measures on this group, which are invariant under KV cross KV by left and right multiplication. And how does a measure act on a function? Well, a measure acts on a function by convolution. So you convolve the function, evaluate at the point x. This is the same as the integral over gv of f of xg mu of g. So mu here, mu is an element of this Hecke algebra. Usually we talk about functions instead of measures, but really that's because implicitly we choose a Haar measure. So it's more canonical to think of the Hecke algebra as being measures. So this was just an aside to remind you how the Hecke algebra acts if you want to think at the finite level. And now let me give the third and more standard definition of automorphic representation. An automorphic representation is an irreducible subquotient . So this is the standard definition of a representation phi, as in definition 2. So these are not completely reducible, but if you take irreducible subquotients, then these are what are called automorphic representations. So one thing that someone asked me after my talk yesterday is, I didn't clarify whether I was talking about unitary representations, cuspidal representations, what kind of automorphic representations was I talking about. So let me just tell you how all these notions are related to each other. So let me tell you how from notion 1 you can go to notion 3. So Langlands proves that the automorphic representations are precisely the irreducible subquotients of cuspidal representations induced parabolically. So here it is implied that we're talking about cuspidal representations of Levy subgroups, and we induce from some parabolic containing this Levy subgroup, and then every reducible subquotient that I get this way is automorphic, and these are all. So you don't see the word cuspidal appearing anywhere else, But the thing is that Cuspidal, I think everybody here knows the definition. The point is that Cuspidal representation tensor with some character, with an appropriate character, is always unitary. Not only unitary, it appears discretely in L2 of G mod gamma. So when I say discretely, when G has center, I should mod out by the center, and then it has some central character. And this means that if I know the answer to the first question, then I basically know the answer to the third question, which representations are automorphic. So these questions are very related to each other, and that's why in the end it's important to classify unitary representations, because only unitary representations can appear as the answers to the first problem. So what are the invariants? So my goal today is to explain essentially what it means for a Galois representation to be associated to an automorphic representation. More precisely, I want to tell you what the invariants are of the automorphic representations. So given an automorphic representation, actually given any reducible representation of the abelian group, you can associate a bunch of invariants. So for today, I'm going to restrict myself to the following invariants: Satake parameters outside of a finite set of places, and infinitesimal character at the infinite places. Does anyone prefer a different notation? I don't know what notation is usually. Is there any standard notation for those? Okay. So let's discuss a little bit now. I'll try to avoid spending a lot of time on the L group, but if we want to talk about the general reductive group, I have to tell you a few things about the dual group and the L group, because all these parameters are defined with respect to the dual group. So I'll try not to spend too much time on it, but let's say a few things about L groups. Let me start from Torrey. It is known that there is an equivalence, contravariant equivalence of categories between Torrey over an algebraically closed field and finitely generated free Z modules. Lattices, in other words. And the equivalence is given by taking a torus T to its character group. Remove the condition that the field is algebraically closed, I have to add here finally generated free Z modules with Galois action. Okay, and then I really mean the character group over the algebraic closure. So So that means that if you have a finitely generated free Z module, you can also take its dual, and this is still a finitely generated free Z module. So you can start feeling now that there should be a dual torus, and indeed, given a torus A over our field K, we associate to it a torus A check over, better to associate to it a torus A check over Z together with an action of Galois. So I'll break the symmetry here, and the reason is that somehow this torus here should know about representations. So the ring or field of definition should depend on the field, the base field of our representations, not the field of definition of A. So if we're talking about complex representations, I should take the dual torus to be defined over C. But I can define it over Z also. And the definition of A check is that characters of A check will be co-characters of the torus that I started with. So that means that A check will be, when you have a torus, the coordinate ring is generated by characters. So A check will be Z of, will be the group ring of the co-character group of A. And then since the Galois group acts on the character group and the co-character group of A, it also acts on this. So here you have an action of Galois. Yes. Okay, so so this semi-direct product is called the L group of the torus. The semi-direct product of the connected components and the Galois group. Sometimes if the Galois group acts by a quotient, we replace this part by the corresponding quotient. It's convenient to have this finite, for instance, when we can. Okay, so what about reductive groups? So given now a reductive group G, well, first of all, I want to repeat the definitions that Chun-Pong gave before. First of all, we say that G is quasi-split if there is a Borel subgroup over the field. So I'm giving myself a reductive group over field K. So quasi-split if there is a Borel subgroup defined over the field K. Split if and only if there is a maximal torus which is split over K. And now over a p-adic field K sub P, K sub V, we say that it is unramified if and only if it is quasi-split and split over, it splits over an unramified extension. And this is equivalent to having a smooth model, to having a reductive model over the ring of integers of K. So in the unramified case, I will denote by K sub V, I will choose a reductive model, and I will define the K sub V to be the points of G over the integers, which is what is called a hyperspecial maximal compact subgroup. It's a very good maximal compact subgroup. So given a reductive group, one thing that I should have said before is that these invariants of my representations are completely local, so my representation is a restricted tensor product of representations of the local groups, and these invariants are completely local, so they depend on the corresponding component of the representation. So what I would like to do now is to focus on the periodic case and tell you how to a ramified representation you associate something called the Sadake parameter. Okay, so so if I start from a global group at almost every place, it will be unramified. It doesn't matter. So if I start from a global group at almost every place, it will be unramified. So what I will do now is I will throw away, so as the set of finite set of places, such that for every V not in S, I have the following things. First of all, G sub V is, so V is, so this set contains the infinite places. The rest of the places are finite. And phi sub V, so I'm assuming that outside of these places, G sub V is unramified. And I'm also assuming that if I'm talking about a specific representation, I'm going to fix the set of places so that pi of V is unramified, which means that it has non-zero vectors invariant under this good maximal compact subgroup. This notion depends on the choice of integral model. So let's fix such a place V not in S. So since for a while I will be discussing about, I will only be discussing local groups at that place, let's simplify the L group. So let's, sorry, I have to talk about the L group. I didn't talk about it yet. So let's fix such a place, and let's fix a Borel subgroup of G defined over KV, which by assumption exists. In reality, I'm not fixing a Borel subgroup. In reality, what I'm doing is I'm going to be looking at the maximal reductive sub. I'm going to be looking at the reductive quotient of the Borel, which is a torus. And for any two choices of Borel subgroups, there's a unique isomorphism between these quotients. The torus quotient of this is called the universal Cartan, universal in the sense that for every two Borel subgroups, there's a unique way to identify, a canonical way to identify the reductive quotient. So I'm really not choosing anything here. So in any case, so let's so let N be its unipotent radical, so in the case of GLN you can think of this as upper triangular matrices, and this is upper triangular matrices with ones on the diagonal. So B over N, which I call A, is a torus. So we already know how to associate to this torus a dual torus, H-check and actually an L-group, which is H-check semi-direct product with the Galois. But actually, since we assume that this torus splits over an unramified extension, that means that the Galois action factors through Frobenius at V. So let's call this the L group for now. So I want to show you just a couple of examples. When G is equal to GL2, well, what is B? You can take the matrix of the form A, B star. Well, A is GM squared, right? So it's the set of elements AB. So what is the dual torus? The dual torus consists of characters of this group, essentially, yes? So the dual torus, what are characters? So maybe I should have said it here. Maybe I should have said it here that one way to think of this dual torus over C, the points over C, is when A is split at least, you can think of those as the unramified characters of A. So what are unramified characters of A here? So I can represent them by pairs key1 and key2, where key1, A will go to key1 of A. Sorry, this element of the Borel will go to key1 of A, key1 of B. So really what I mean is that I can represent what is the, so this correspondence, let me just say something in a hand-waving way and it's easy to figure it out. So how do I think of them as unramified characters? I think of them as unramified characters through the naive local class field theory, the unramified local class field theory, which says that if I have a local field, periodic, let's say, then KV star over OV star is isomorphic to the group generated by Frobenius at V. Okay. Sorry, I mixed up a few things here. Okay. So the point that I want to make is that to such a character of the Borel, you really associate the element key1 of a uniformizer, key2 of a uniformizer. While when the group is, let's say, SL2, what is a Borel subgroup of SL2? It's A inverse. So if this goes to key1, to a character key1A, key2A inverse, you see that it doesn't really matter what key1 and key2 are. What matters is what is key1, what are key1 and key2 up to multiplying both by the same character. So in other words, what I'm saying is that the character of this Borel subgroup is determined by an element. So this key1 is not well defined anymore, and this key2 is not well defined anymore, but they are defined modulo the center of GL2. So implicitly, what I'm doing here, I'm thinking of this dual torus as living in a bigger group. Here, this bigger group is GL2, and here, this bigger group is PGL2. If finally I was talking about PGL2, and the Borel was, then the Borel is the set of AB modulo the center, well, then I cannot take any possible character. I have to take characters whose product is trivial on the center. So that means that the dual torus will be the set of elements. It has to be of this form. C2 has to be the inverse of C1. So the dual torus really lives in SL2. So anyway, this is just in order not to give a very formal definition. The point is that once we have this dual, once we have this torus A, and it's L group A check cross Galois, actually this A check lives inside of a reductive inside of a dual group, which is of the form a connected reductive group times Galois again. And you saw some examples here. When the group is SL2, the dual group is PGL2, and so on and so forth. Okay, so I spent a little bit more time than I was thinking of spending on. Are there any questions? Is the vague idea clear? So the precise idea. Let me say the precise idea. The precise idea is that okay. So this torus A is you know it once you know its character group together with the Galois action, right? But this torus A comes with more data. It comes with a roots system. In fact, a based root system, because this torus A was the quotient of a Borel. Then you can consider the co-characters of A. This is again a lattice, and you can consider the co-roots inside of them. So these are data that come from my group G, but these data are symmetric. So if I and these data describe G at least over the algebraic closure. So if I interchange characters and co-characters of A, and roots and co-roots, I get the dual torus together with extra data. So I get the data for a different reductive group, and this is the dual group of G. So just because I have this symmetry, I can interchange them, and then I get the data for another reductive group, and this is the connected part of the dual of the L group of G. And the Galois action comes from the fact that Galois acts on all of this picture. Okay, so, but for the purpose of the rest of the talk, you can just think of explicit examples. So when you have GLN, the dual is GLN. I'm not writing down the Galois action. When you have SLN, the dual is PGLN. And of course, since this operation is symmetric, when you have PGLN, the dual is SLN. When you have SP2N, the dual is SO2N plus 1. When you have SO2N, the dual is SO2N, and so on and so forth. The connected part of the dual. So for us today, this will just be a way of keeping track of some invariants, just to keep track of the logistics of some invariants. And these invariants are the Satake parameters. So what are the Satake parameters? Well, remember that we were fixing a place where our group wasn't ramified, okay? So we want to understand the Hecke algebra of KV bi-invariant measures on GV that I was talking about before. So the theorem of Satake Well, let me just for simplicity assume that G is split. I will make a comment afterwards in the end about what happens in the general unramified case. It's completely analogous. So the theorem of Sataki is that this Secchi algebra, so this is a complex Secchi algebra for now, right? So these are complex valued measures on the group GV, compactly supported and bi-invariant under KV. And the theorem is that this convolution algebra is commutative, and it is isomorphic to, let me write it in a couple of ways. So I can take the maximal dual torus and the coordinate ring of the maximal dual torus and invariants under the Weyl group. Or I can take, so by the Chevalier isomorphism, this is the same as taking regular functions on the dual group, invariant under conjugacy, but what are functions on the group invariant under conjugacy? They are generated, so there is a free there is a basis for this vector space, and this basis consists of characters of finite dimensional irreducible representations of this complex group. So I can think of this as being also the representation algebra of the representation ring of G check tensor with C. Now already the arithmetic people should start complaining because I'm tensoring with C all the way, all the time, and there's no reason to do it, right? So this representation algebra is actually a Z algebra, right? Spanned by virtual representations, the algebra of virtual representations, and therefore there was no reason to tensor with C. And on this side, if you think about the Hecke action, well, these are measures on G bi-invariant under KV. So let me write it this way. These are measures compactly supported on G mod KV, which are invariant by KV. Well, KV is an open subgroup of this, so this is a discrete. This is a discrete set. So I might want to consider the measures which, on each point of this set, are integral, right? Give an integer value. And in fact, if you translate what Florian was doing yesterday, where he was taking, so in the classical language, he was taking a subgroup. A discrete subgroup gamma, let's say, so he was taking a discrete subgroup gamma, and then he was taking a rational element in the group, alpha, and then he was decomposing this into double cosets. Ah, you actually used KV. Maybe Kirsten used gamma? I don't know. It doesn't matter. So, okay, anyway, the point is, I mean, you can find this this kind of formulation in several books where you decompose double cosets into right cosets, and you interpret the Hecke operators as being what? As being a summation of something over gamma I. But this something was already invariant under gamma. So really, the Hecke operators are convolution by the characteristic measure. The Hecke operators are convolution by the characteristic function of gamma alpha gamma times the measure which associates to each point here, the mass one. So if you translate between those languages, There is a natural Z basis here. There is a natural Z basis. But the problem is that these two bases do not coincide. Okay, so in general, these are two different Z structures. They're not so different. So I'll say something about them in a moment. Let me just explain where this isomorphism comes from. So because for someone who hasn't seen it before, it's a little bit weird that this Secchi algebra should have something to do with a dual group. So where does this come from? Well, if you want to understand an algebra, one way that you could understand it is find a faithful module for this algebra that you understand. The idea then is the following. The idea is to consider the module of compactly supported functions of G mod n, which are invariant under K. Let me drop the index V for now. So this is a module for the Secchi algebra, right, because it consists of k invariant vectors. But on the other hand, by the Ivasava decomposition, you know that G is the Borel times k. So that means that G mod n mod k has a basis. This space is the same as, well, what am I doing? I'm modding on one side by n and on the other side by k. And so in the end, it's enough to know a function on the torus, on A. Okay, but in fact, this torus on A will be invariant by B intersect K. So this, in the end, will be compactly supported functions on A modulo the maximal compact subgroup of A. What is A mod the maximal compact subgroup of A? A is a torus. A split torus, we're in the split case now. So let me just give an example. When A is the multiplicative group, right? So what is A of K mod the maximal compact subgroup of A? Well, this is just KV star mod OV star. So this is just Z. And actually, a better way to say it is that this is just the co-character group of A. And therefore, compactly supported functions on this discrete set is just the group ring of the co-character group, and this generalizes. So this is the same as the group ring of the co-character group. I should emphasize actually that the ring structure here is not irrelevant because we have a left action of A on this module. So this module has a right action of the Secchi algebra and a left action of this, and it is faithful under this action. Sorry, X star. So now, Now consider the action of the Hecke algebra and consider the map from the Hecke algebra to this space given by taking an element of the Hecke algebra to the characteristic function of nk, just the orbit map. So we agreed that this is just the group ring of the co-character ring, but recall that the co-character ring of the co-character group of A is the character group of the dual torus. So what is the group ring of this lattice then? This is the coordinate ring of the dual torus. And it turns out that the image of this map, it turns out that this map gives an isomorphism. So this map is injective and its image is Weyl group invariant of this ring. But of course here I have tensored both sides with C. So if you want another way to see this incompatibility of the Z structures, it comes from the fact that this module has a good Z structure and it is not preserved by the action of the Z module here. But anyway, that's probably too much detail for now. Let's see what this discussion gives us. The conclusion is the following. So we said that this Hecke algebra is commutative, and we identified what this Hecke algebra is. So now what happens when you have an irreducible module for a commutative algebra? So there is something that I'm not going to say here. So if I start with a representation pi, which is irreducible, Florian already said it, and has kv invariant vectors, then this is an irreducible module for the Hecke algebra. And since this is commutative, this Hecke algebra acts on this by a character. By scalars. And therefore, from pi v, we get an element of we get a homomorphism from the Hecke algebra to C. But what is a homomorphism from the Hecke algebra to C? It's a maximal ideal in the Hecke algebra. So from pi v, we get a closed point in spec of, which ring do I prefer to use? I prefer to use this ring now, this way of writing it. But another way to understand this ring is, by definition, this is the affine quotient of G check by G check. And what are closed points of this? These are semi-simple conjugacy classes in G check. So to my representation pi b, I can associate TP, TV, which is a semi-simple conjugacy class in the dual group, and since we want to, in the end, to have Galois representations, it's nicer to write it as follows. I can associate to it a map rho v from the group generated by Frobenius at v to g check, where Frobenius, the connection between this and this is that Frobenius at v goes to tv. In general, because for now, for general unramified group G, what I would really have would be a map, would be a homomorphism from Frobenius to the L group. Recall now that the L group is a semi-direct product, but Galois really acts by Frobenius here. So the L group has a map down to the Galois of the residue field, and then I want this to be the identity. This is what the general Satake parameter is, but again, there's a way to understand it this in this language, namely the general Satake parameter would be a Frobenius twisted conjugacy class in G-check. Not a conjugacy class, but a Frobenius twisted conjugacy class. Okay, so these are the Satake parameters. These are the Satake parameters. So when people say that I have a Galois representation an automorphic representation and I can associate to it a Galois representation, in particular, so what do they mean? First of all, this Galois representation should have image in the L group. And of course, in the case of GLN, the L group is essentially GLN, so it is really a Galois representation. And secondly, so one of the features that this correspondence should have is that for these good primes that we were discussing before, this rho of the decomposition restricted to the decomposition group. Oh yes, yes, yes. So really, I mean, L. Yes. Okay. So for V not in S and V not dividing L, I really want that the restriction of this to the decomposition group factors through is unramified. Factors through the Satake parameter. Of this representation. Now, of course, I should also say what happens for places outside of S, because there are places where my representation will not be unramified. So here you have to invoke the local Langlands correspondence. I just want to say that the picture for representations, for general representations of periodic groups, is even more complicated than the picture for real groups that I presented yesterday. Namely, not every representation is a subquotient of a generalized principal series. There are also these things that are called supercuspidals and subquotients of supercuspidals parabolically induced. So again, you have a whole business of classifying unitary So general pi v, again, you would like to classify unitary representations, and these unitary representations well, you have good and bad unitary representations, like the principal series and the complementary series that we were talking about yesterday. So you have some good subsets of the unitary ones, which are called tempered. Then you have another subset of the tempered, which is called discrete series. So discrete series would mean that pi v tensor its dual embeds into L2 of GV, modulo the center, maybe. Okay, so at least those representations. So this is space with a G cross G action. So you have a lot of work to do to say what you know about representations and which representations can show up. But at least outside of a finite number of places, this Galois representation should contain the information about the Satake parameters. And finally, let me say a word about infinitesimal character. So what happens at places at infinity? This is something that we saw in the case of SL2 yesterday. So infinitesimal character. Now let's take V a place, an infinite place, and we will consider GV as a real algebraic group. Even if it's a complex group, even if V is a complex place, I will consider it as a real group by restriction of scalars. Okay, and the reason is that the representation will not be holomorphic anyway, so it will be real analytic, but not holomorphic. It will be smooth, but not holomorphic. So, like I was saying yesterday, we're considering a category of smooth representation. So you have an action of GV of the Lie algebra on your representation. But in fact, since this is a complex vector space, you really have, let me drop the V now, okay? You really have an action of the complexified Lie algebra. And like I was saying before, even if your group doesn't have center, the universal enveloping algebra of G has center. So this action extends to the universal enveloping algebra by the universal property. And we set Z of G to be the center of the universal enveloping algebra. So, imitating the Satake isomorphism, Harishchandra proved the following theorem. That was a joke, he didn't imitate anything. It was before that. So there is a canonical isomorphism between this universal enveloping algebra, the center of the universal enveloping algebra, and do I still have the Satake somewhere? No? I'll write it down. So recall that one way that I wrote Satake before was this. Polynomial functions on the dual torus invariant under the Weyl group. So the Harishchandra theorem says that this ring is isomorphic to polynomial functions on the Lie algebra of the dual torus invariant under the Weyl group. So Harishchandra was really not thinking about the Langlands dual group. This Lie algebra of the dual torus, which is the same as home, well, it's the it's a co-character group. It's a character group of A tensor with C. Harishchandra really was thinking about it as the you take the Lie algebra of a maximal torus in G, you complexify it and you take its dual. All these are the same thing. Yes? What do you mean? Shift? Well, this includes the shift. Yes? So, hence, for an irreducible representation, we get again by the same way a character of we get a character of this algebra. So the maximal spectrum of this algebra. Okay, you get a point in the maximal spectrum of this algebra. But what is the maximal spectrum of this algebra? Well, closed points of this are just really complex points of this vector space modulo the action of the Weyl group. And this is what is called the infinitesimal character. One way to understand this infinitesimal character is to consider this generalized principal series that we were describing yesterday. So these were induced from the Borel, from some character with a with a twist, with a shift. And then what is the character? The character is a map from a torus to C star. I'm considering the split case now, G split. Okay, G split. So the differential of the character will go from the Lie algebra of A to C. In other words, the differential of the character will be an element of A check. And its image in this quotient is an infinitesimal character. Of any irreducible subquotient of this principal series. So the last thing that I want to say is to notice the following, that this this vector space has a natural Z structure. So we say that lambda V is integral if and only if it is in the image of, basically, if and only if the corresponding character here is an integral character. So it is in the image of the and then the conjecture is that if pi is an automorphic representation and pi v is, well, Cascadal, let's say, and pi v, lambda v is integral for every place dividing infinity, then to pi you can associate a Galois representation in the sense that I described before into the L group of G. If I had more time, but I don't, I would explain how this notion of integral is a little bit problematic with respect to this shift. So well, you can read the paper of Bazart and G, which explains which explains precisely what this conjecture is, and two different notions of integrality. Okay.